Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey, After Buzzers, before we move on to your next topic, we just want to say thanks to our sponsor, Anchor. If you haven't heard about Anchor, it's the easiest way to make a podcast. Let me explain. It's free. Plus, there are creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer. Also, Anchor will distribute your podcast for you so it can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and many more. Plus, you can make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership, and it's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. Download the free Anchor app or go to Anchor FM to get started.
Welcome, Spotlighters. We've got another special segment on Pure for WGN with Alex Paxton Beasley and Ryan Robbins. Stay tuned.
You're tuned in to AfterBuzz TV, the ESPN of TV talk. Now, let the buzz begin.
Welcome, guys. We've got the cast of Pure here, the lovely Alex Paxton Beasley and Ryan Robbins. And you guys, obviously, you had to rap this to get the job, right?
Yes. Obviously. Yeah, that was a requirement. Yeah, that was our only audition, was learning and then performing this rap. Yeah,
freestyle.
That's rad. Could you imagine if that was it?
That'd be amazing. Are you kidding?
I would not be here right now.
Oh, come on. Give yourself some credit.
I would be here harder. You know what I mean?
Yeah. This song is incredible. I love this song so much. It's a Mennonite rap. It's in Plattdeutsch. Low German. It's so great.
I really love this. But I full on pictured that audition in my head, and you guys were in like the 90s, like Missy Elliott track suits, and you were just going for it.
I'd have the one pant leg rolled up.
Yes. Awesome.
Giving me so much life. All right. So for everybody tuning in, Pure is a brand new TV show that's debuting on WGN, and you play?
I play Anna Funk.
And Ryan?
I play Noah Funk, newly elected pastor to the community.
And the pilot starts off with a pretty grisly murder. Yeah. And like some coke smuggling, and then you find out that all is not kosher within the Mennonite community.
Yeah, just a nice soft opening. Just ease you in.
And for people who don't know, who want to check it out for the first time, can you guys tell them a little bit about the show and what it's about? And also, clarification, two things. When I saw the still posters, I totally thought this was set in colonial times. Mm-hmm. And then I also thought it was about the Amish once I saw the cars, but I was confused why the Amish people were in cars. It is about neither of those things.
Yes.
Right. Well, it's about Mennonites who are also Anabaptists, like the Amish, with some considerable differences. Our show is about, it's based on, inspired by true events, the Mennonite mob, drug smugglers.
This is real?
Yeah. It's based on something that has really happened.
Yeah, it's been going on for 25 years or so.
Yeah.
It's a very small group of Mennonites. It's, you know, we're definitely not saying that this is all Mennonites. It's a very small group. And in fact, our show is about the other side. It's about, you know, the true Mennonite communities who really believe in their faith and their family and their communities. And this this drug cartel infiltrates our community, and it's a cancer, it's a virus, and as the new pastor, my character Noah wants it out. He wants it just gone, and he thinks it's just that simple. Just get it out of here, and everything will be fine again. But it's the drug cartel, and it is absolutely not that simple.
And how do you react? Because he takes a lot of choices in the pilot episode, and you have to have a sit down with him. Like, hi, I'm your wife. You can't just say yes and no.
Yeah. Well, you know, something that I think we both really love about this show is that Anna and Noah are in every way a partnership. Their relationship is about equality and respect. And so, you know, I think Noah is trying to take care of things. He wants to take care of his family, and he wants to take care of his community. And part of that is trying to protect his wife. And the way that he chooses to try to protect her is maybe to not tell her some things that he should probably be sharing, because she's very good at handling stuff, to put it eloquently.
Like a lot of relationships, you know, the husband. Noah, he's sort of like the sail fluttering in the wind, And Anna is the rudder and the steering wheel going, no, just come on. Let's just get back on track here.
That's a good analogy. I really like that. So she knows that something's going on. She doesn't know what exactly. And as he shares more and more with her, they're able to come to that place of sharing in the responsibility and sharing in making these incredibly difficult decisions and actions that they have to do in order to keep themselves and their children and their community as safe as they possibly can.
And then they're both completely overwhelmed together.
Oh my God, yes. Yeah, it's really hard, but they're in it together.
And then for people watching the show who are super like cinephiles and they love watching TV, how do you guys film it? Do you film it long form in the sense that you film it all in a block of like 3-4 months or more like a film, or do you do it more like traditional TV?
Well, it's sort of a combination of things. We block shoot a couple of episodes at a time. We do shoot it. We took us about three or so months to shoot the first season. So because we do 6 episodes and, you know, they're each an hour long, it does feel like shooting quite a long movie. Mm. And that's sort of a gift, right? Because it means that our story is... It has a very genuine arc over those 6 episodes. The first season is all directed by Ken Girardi, who is incredible. And we've got this cohesion of vision and of story and of visual language all through the first season that's just pretty remarkable, I think.
Wait, so I have a question then from the technical standpoint. If you only had one director, mm-hmm. was second team coming in to do the blocking overlaps for the different episodes? If you guys, let's say, had to film one location for episode 3, but then you had to come back to that same location for 6. I'm not saying that happens. I'm just speculating.
Well, the reason we block shoot is because of that. We're very location specific. Our locations are essentially characters in our story. So we block shoot 4 locations. So it's okay. Well, we have this location for X amount of time. So we're going to shoot everything that takes place in this location in these 2 episodes here. And so it works out better that way. We do have an amazing second team. Yeah. We have an amazing crew. Our crew is absolutely phenomenal. Best crew I've ever worked with. And, it's epic. It's a big undertaking, our show.
Especially when you add in, you know, we're dealing with live animals. We've got horses on set. We've got big crowd scenes. We've got a lot of, the moving parts of just like the technical side of things of making this show it's pretty incredible. And it goes very smoothly.
You consider we're playing in 2 worlds, right? Yeah. There's the Mennonite world and then there's the Auslander world. And when you're watching the show, if you appreciate cinema and color and texture, I'm very proud of our show for that.
Yeah.
The Mennonite world doesn't look anything like the Auslander world, and vice mm-hmm. versa. The colors are slightly different. The framing is different, and that's tricky in and of itself. You know, keeping track of that, and between Ken Girardi, our director, Michael Amo, the creator and the writer, and Tom Best, who was the DP for season 1, their vision was absolutely incredible. And you know, when we saw the end product, it was just like I was just blown away.
Yeah.
And now from the actor's point of view, for any actors that might be tuning in, how did you guys approach your character? And also, how hard was it to learn German for your characters? Because fun fact, there is a lot of subtitling going on, especially for all the church scenes.
It's not even German. Yeah, it's
low German. Yeah. So that was, I think, one of the biggest challenges for us, because Plattdeutsch doesn't really exist. It's not really a written language. It doesn't really exist in audio recording. Like, there's not a ton of material for us to draw on.
Oh,
so it's
wow.
not the kind of thing where we could go, if we were wondering how to say something, and just go Google it on set and then have that at our disposal. So we were lucky enough to work with a pretty incredible consultant, Laura Cahoot, who is, sort of our encyclopedia. She grew up a Mennonite in Paraguay and then in Western Canada. And she's the person who is, you know, behind the monitors with her headphones on whenever we're speaking Plattdeutsch, just like paying attention to every single syllable that we pronounce. She's the one that we go to if we want something to say off the cuff, if we want to make our behavior more alive, if we have a question about etiquette or any of that stuff. She's the person that we go to.
And there's very specific things in our action as old colony Mennonites, which is what we play. You know, they're not PDA people, you know what I mean? Like, and it's like you have your impulse is to do a scene and touch a partner in the scene. And that's not something. And Laura was great for like, well, what you would do maybe instead is this. And there's not a lot of I love yous. There's not a lot of that. It's the affection is much more practical.
Yeah.
And so that was really cool, the ins and outs of that type of work and being true to the character and being true as we could to that way of living.
Yeah.
So I know, Ryan, you've had to work with difficult languages before. Have you ever had to do that before, Alex, where you had to learn another language for character?
Well, I do speak French as a second language. I was much more fluent when I was younger, and I got to work in French for the very first time at the beginning of last year, which was crazy. Also because, it wasn't on a French show. It was an American show that had my character only spoke in French. We were a French family. And it's interesting to get a script like that and be like, okay, this isn't quite how a French person would say that. Yeah. It's the language is too formal. And I feel like that's a lot of what Laura was doing with us, just trying. And, now we've been renewed for a second season, and so we got to do a lot more of the work in the Low German and starting to begin to understand the way that their sentence structure works, I find really fascinating, to figure out how a language is put together. Because it's not like a romance language where our sentence structure, our grammar is like pretty easily translatable. We put sentences together the same way. Not so in Low German.
Yeah, you know how it is. You're trying to make a point by, accentuating a certain syllable or word. And in that language, you have to be careful with that because it could mean something completely different. And so that was really I get sweaty just talking about it.
I know. It's so satisfying though, because it's such an important part of their world, and it's so foreign to us that to be able to have that avenue in that doorway into the world. I really loved it, and I want to keep doing it because it's so hard, but it's the most fun thing when I'm really feeling like it's starting to gel and I'm actually able to do it a little bit. It's like this crazy mountain that you get to the top and you're like, oh my God, this is amazing. And then you're like, oh, there's a much higher peak. I've got to keep climbing.
What a great mental workout. But I mean, Ryan, obviously your last language that you worked on was so easy. It was just like, what, ancient Egyptian?
Ancient Aramaic, yeah.
Oh, Aramaic, there we go.
Which is another language that didn't really exist on record, and which I also had to do with white contacts in my eyes. So if I forgot a line, I couldn't refer to it. And I couldn't yell line because nobody knew what the hell I was talking about. So I was like, line? I don't know. I have no idea. It's funny, real quick segue is... you're talking about Arrow, of course. And, and during that scene, I had these white contacts I couldn't see, and I've got to walk towards Stephen Amell and deliver this dialogue in ancient Aramaic. And I can't see, and I'm walking. And Gregory Smith directed the episode.
Yes, I know. You told me this.
An old friend, and I can't. Apparently, I don't walk straight. So I kept walking on an angle, and everybody thought it's funny. And then finally, Stephen goes, "Guys, seriously, I haven't shot a single real arrow this entire show. Do we not have the budget to just CG the whites in his eyes?" And there was this moment of silence, and I was like, right, yes, we can definitely do that. So that was kind of a funny, but yes, but...
Oh, wait, so then they did end up CGing the whites in your eyes?
Thank God.
Yeah. What a time to find out that, God forbid, if your vision ever went, you would never walk straight again.
No, but I guess I have like a subtle limp.
It might be an ear thing. It might be an inner ear thing, right?
I got that weird ear thing. But but Steven, he saved my butt on that one. And but that didn't help me with this language at all, because they're completely different. I have an okay comprehension with German. I don't speak a second language, but I comprehend German a little bit.
German is actually the most similar to English in its formatting.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and that's the great thing about it. What was familiar was the Latin derivative with French, mm-hmm. Spanish, and German, so you could start to recognize certain bits of dialogue. You start, over time now, mm-hmm. we're starting to recognize certain bits of dialogue, so it makes it easier to remember. This language is a mix of Dutch, German, English. It's its whole other thing.
I found out recently that actually my great aunt speaks it, which is insane. That's just crazy. Completely randomly, because it's like the language they speak in parts of that part of Europe where she's from. She's just I definitely speak some Low German.
Yeah,
like, what are the chances?
Well, now you've got somebody on the line you can call if all else fails.
I know. Yeah.
She's your Google now.
She is my Google now. No way, I'll never abandon Laura. I love Laura.
Sorry.
Or somebody to disappoint if you get it wrong.
Yeah, someone who's going to watch it and be like, your pronunciation was not great, yeah, Alex. No,
that was... Oh, Thanksgiving dinners. and then just a little bit more about your characters for the listeners. I'd love to hear about how you guys tackled them and how you approached bringing them to life and what that process was like for you.
Yeah. I mean, it's a huge amount of research and an ongoing kind of research to try to begin to understand the kind of life that these characters were living before the drug cartel came into the community. In terms of Anna, my favorite thing about her is that in the Anabaptist faith, you are baptized at 17. You choose to be baptized. And that for me is like such a central tenet of her character to me, that she has made specific choices, conscious choices about who she is and who she wants to be. And, so she's living in this world with her eyes wide open. And she loves it. So yeah, that was part of it for me. And also like I am, I'm such a geek for, first of all, the history of this. I think we both like went deep into trying to understand about, you know, the Anabaptists and where they came from and how they would have ended up where they ended up in Canada and where they ended up in Mexico and all of that. But also for me, this is a dream role on so many levels, but her, like the house that our carpenters, our set deck, our art department made for us is like one of my favorite places in the world. And just sitting in that space and doing my embroidery or like, you know, darning the clothes, that kind of thing, understanding the day-to-day tasks that would be involved in living this life, that was so satisfying and so necessary to who these people are, right? Like they're eking out this difficult living that they have chosen. So yeah, there's a lot of that, you know, we read a lot, we watched a lot of documentaries and then just for me too, I'm not a mother in real life and I'm not a wife. But just finding places where, you know, finding those relationships with Ryan first and foremost, and then with our kids, Jessica Clement and Dylan Everett, and with Gord Rand, who plays, Noah's brother, finding that family unit, it was so interesting to find, you know, everybody's bringing their own information into this world. So much of the work is already done. You just have to be open and curious and find those relationships within that.
We got very lucky that the connection was very easy and we're all really tight. We're very close on and off camera. Still, we're all friends. We still keep in touch. It sort of cemented a lifelong friendship between all of us. You know, we call each other about things. We confide in each other about things. You know, that's really, it's not that it's rare. It's just hard to achieve. It's hard to get that sort of, simpatico, if you will, like with that many people. And the cast is exceptional. And to be honest, it goes beyond the cast. We're the crew. We hang out and we have baseball team.
They're they're the greatest. We have a baseball team.
Yeah, we have a pure baseball team. And
who are you guys playing against?
Whatever other production is in town at the time, we'll take them on.
Yeah,
and we always have more fun.
We do.
Have you had a winning streak?
No.
I think we always lose. But listen, we're the loudest. Yeah. That's my fault.
That's what counts.
I do a lot of yelling.
I'm Italian. Who's ever the loudest is actually the winner.
Yeah, and don't bring ringers in like some of these other shows.
Yeah, some of these other shows.
The Mist. What?
Ryan, circling back for your character, how did you find Noah? How was that for you?
For me, what was the challenge and the joy is his stillness. He's very grounded. And unlike Anna, I don't think it was a choice for Noah. I think he always knew. Mm-hmm. It was never a question that he was going to follow in his faith. And I think that makes such a beautiful dynamic because Noah would just rather shut out the Auslander world and pretend it doesn't exist. Whereas Anna is very aware of it and very aware of what it is and what it is capable of, where Noah just wants to just ignore it completely. And moving forward into the experience that they end up going through, that becomes super helpful. And then same with Abel, played by Gord Rand, Noah's brother. Abel's, you know, he's struggling with addiction and he's been out in the world. So, their partnership is also, essential for Noah, for Abel to actually school him on, no, this is the real world. Like, mm-hmm. Noah humiliates Abel when they're out in the real world. He just doesn't know,
He doesn't know anything. It's a different way
and
of life.
It's just, and there's something, I find that life really attractive. The living off the grid, the simple life, get rid of technology for a minute, just step away from all that for a while. I live in a relatively small town in the mountains and I used to live here. I used to live in LA and I just got to a point where I was able to do that and I was grateful to do that. I live in a little town and I like that sort of simpler life from my town. Everybody looks each other in the eyes, says, hey, hi, how you doing? Good morning. And we have a community. We dig each other out of the snow and we help each other out. And I appreciate that more so now having shot our show.
That's really nice. Yeah. All right. Well, as we've dug into your characters, we're going to pull up a clip from the pilot episode for you guys who are watching.
I had the reins around my waist. There was a snake in the grass. You know how that mare can be.
I lied for you. In church. I will do whatever I have to protect my family. Lie to anyone you want to, but not to me. What happened?
Eli Voss sent a message.
Dun, dun, dun.
Really rap.
It's a very lighthearted comedy, as you can see. We also have a couple stills from set that we can pull up just as we're talking for anyone watching the interview versus listening to it. There's one of you looking out, and it seems like you are being quite judgy there as Noah.
I think I know who you're looking at in that picture.
Yeah, it's me looking at Bronco. It's AJ Buckley's character.
Look at that spring chicken.
And then we've got you in church plotting.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. With Jessica Clement, who plays Tina, our daughter. She's just the greatest.
You just look so furious in that photo.
Yeah, listen, there's a lot going on. There's a lot of balls to juggle. It's tough. It's funny because you say, like, this show is very heavy. It's dealing with some really intense themes, but there are moments of levity. Like Gord in that clip that we just watched, Gord, who plays Abel, is just, he's so alive and, he's such a wonderful actor. I just find it so funny when Abel just like slinks out of it. He like puts on his hat and he's like, oh, you're in trouble.
This is one of the things for actors watching. I'm going to address the camera here. Is if you watch our show, and I hope you do, and I hope you enjoy it, but really pay attention to the nuances of this cast. What we're losing, in my opinion, as actors is listening. Mm-hmm. We don't listen like we should in scenes. And if you watch Gord Rand, if you watch Dylan Everett, you watch Jessica Clement, and Alex, our show is full of great listeners. Mm-hmm. Dylan Taylor,
God, Dylan's amazing.
He's a monster of a man with just this heartbreak in his
Dylan
eyes.
Dylan plays Joey.
He plays Joey, the big thug, but when you really break it down, there are so many moments where people don't say anything. And they say so much, and that's just a testament to the cast, to this talented cast that we have. There are scenes that we changed certain things the way we shot just based on someone's off camera performance. Like our show, a lot of times, and actors watching will know. Sometimes when it's not your coverage, it's your partner's coverage. You might phone it in a little bit. You might not give it 100%. That doesn't happen on our show. Not ever. And when you're giving a performance and your scene partner's not even on camera and they're just drenched in tears, you got to cover that and you got to reward that. And our showrunner and creator and our directors are phenomenal with that, with recognizing it. Dylan Everett is an example I talk about a lot, a scene in the church where his reactions informed my performance. It actually changed my intention and my performance for the better. It made my performance so much better. And Ken Girardi, he clocked it. He noticed it. And so they turned around to get the reaction to, so you could see what I was playing off of. And it turns out to this beautiful unspoken moment. And, you know, Gord Rand is a genius at it. And behavior, you know, watch these amazing actors and their behavior choices. Again, Dylan Taylor is an actor who is very specific and careful with his behavior, but it's unique and it's original and it's incredibly watchable. We are so lucky. AJ Buckley.
We really did. Oh my God.
There's no other actor on this planet like AJ Buckley. You know, we had Rosie Perez come in who just brought her A game. She was phenomenal in this. She came in prepared. She didn't break her accent. She was like, we got lucky. As an actor, you will really, really appreciate our show.
I think we part of what we got so lucky in is that it really feels like everybody in our show, we all want to tell this story together so badly. And it feels like we found that with each other. Like, we are on the same page. And a lot of that has to do with the community that we're able to have, you know, both in the story, but also just within ourselves, with our crew. I had Eddie, who is on our first camera. He said to me very early on in the process, he was like, I love working in film because it is the most collaborative medium. Everybody on this set has to be doing their job for this to work. It's not just about the cameras. It's not just about the lighting. It's not just about the actors. Everybody has to do their job. And it feels that way so completely on this show, you know, from the very, very tip top down. And it's amazing because it's inspiring, right? Like, you feel so supported by everybody. So you're like, oh my God, okay, you're really listening. So I'm like, we're going for this. We're making something.
Gives you the freedom to be creative.
Yeah. I don't know if you can tell that we're very passionate.
We really love
about
our show. No, we really
like our show. It's great. I love this passion because that's why people should tune in.
It is. This show is if you're ever lucky enough to, if this is what you want to do and you're lucky enough to be on a show like this, you'll understand it's a rare opportunity and we're just grateful as hell and milking it for all it's worth, because we understand what we have here. We understand the magic that we have here. And we're so grateful that we have a network like WGN America who, you know, they had the foresight and the faith to go, like, to take a chance on us and be like, man, they saw something in us, in our show, and gave us another season, which is amazingly grateful. And I really hope that we get to do several more for them because they've been incredible to us. And, you know, if it wasn't for them, we wouldn't be here right now. So,
well, I loved it. So I hope everybody also tunes in. They actually spoiled me. They sent me the whole season.
Yes.
But I'm terrible at spoilers. So I only watched the pilot and I was like, you're not allowed to see what happens next, because not even meaning to, I'd be like, so what was that thing? And you're like, really?
I want to know. Oh my God. I want you to watch the rest of it. And then I want to talk because I want to know. I want to know how you feel about how the first season ends.
Oh, okay. I'm going to probably binge it this weekend.
Oh my God. It's epic.
Yeah. I'll binge it this weekend. And
yes. Okay. Thoughts,
but I'm excited for everybody to see it. I think it's great.
Thank you.
And it kind of gives me, like, because of the opening and how darkly it all opens up. And there is, like, moments of levity and it is funny and there's family. There's a lot of family.
Yeah.
Even the friendships are more like familial relationships than typical friendships that you see on TV shows. Cause I feel because you've all made these choices as characters to live this more secluded, difficult life, the bonds are tighter, the bonds that bind you.
Yeah. Yeah. We're existing within our own community, that we've all agreed to be here. So yeah, I think it is a different sort of bond between people that aren't necessarily related by blood.
I think it's a good time for the show too. Like, the show is really timely right now. I think, you know, the climate we're in and the times we're up against, I think this kind of show is necessary and important to have out there to see, you know, like, you just, and I'm so glad that we have it.
I was actually going to bring that up because in the pilot episode, they address bullying right off the top. Your daughter's getting bullied on the school bus for being Amish. And she's like, I'm not Amish, you idiot. But it does tie in. Even though you are secluded, like, the kids still go to school. Yep. You use cars. You have electricity. It's not as secluded as something.
We have some,
like,
electricity. We have electricity for
the barn,
for the barn, for farming, but not in our home. Yeah.
There's some. It's not quite as secluded as people have seen, but you see you interacting with yourselves and with the community and a lot of the issues I feel that we're all talking about in like our day-to-day lives are reflected even here.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I think, you know, to speak to what Ryan's talking about it being appropriate for this time, you know, there are some things in this that are absolutely universal. You know, the truths of your family, who you are within your family, what you would do for those bonds, choices that you make, your value system, your belief system, what that means to you. I think there's a ton going on here that people will be surprised to try to, you know, you watch it and you try to ask yourself what you would do in these situations. And I think the questions are universal, right? If you're cornered, what are you going to do? Who are you going to protect and how are you going to protect them? Including yourself. What are you going to do? What, you know, when the chips are down, what are your limits? And it's a, you know, that's a really tough question.
Yeah. And we're in a place right now where it's just the easiest go to is just to label something. Cause it's easier for me to label you this, you know, and you could tell me otherwise, but I don't want to hear otherwise. I just want to know what I think. And that's all that matters to me. And the real root of who you are is essential and important, and you get to see that with these characters. You don't just get to go, oh, this is an archetype, that's an archetype, which you see a lot in TV right now. Is you go, oh, this is a familiar archetype, oh, that's the hero, that's the villain. Our show isn't like that. Like, you know, Ken Jurati likes to say about the hero and the villain, you know, Noah and Eli Voss, two sides of the same coin. It's just all about choices, and either one could have gone either way. And everybody is flawed. There are no perfect people in our show. There are, you know, everybody has a journey, and you understand every character. You understand everybody, like the character of Bronco, what that guy has to go through. And, you know,
I'm like ready for it now.
Well, there's a lot of crossover, right? There's, you know, we don't believe the same things that Bronco believes, but there's a spirit of cooperation that comes up, and you help each other out and you figure it out together. Even if you're not, if you don't feel the same way about things, you can work together. You can have a conversation.
I'm currently really invested in what happens to Ezekiel.
Oh,
this little kid, man.
You know, he's, he was an amazing find. He's the son of our editor.
Oh, that's awesome.
Felix
is who speaks German. He sort of came out of nowhere. And just shocked everybody. He was unbelievable, this kid. He was just so watchable and so much fun to work with.
He was awesome.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm really excited. I've been rooting for him ever since he made it. It's not a spoiler. God. As soon as the episode opens, you'll see Ezekiel is the sole survivor of the massacre. And I don't, I'm in it for him right now.
Like, okay, amazing, cool.
Cool. He's if my ship analogy is correct, he's sort of the mast, really. He's like, because he sort of is that, like, the through line that travels through the show.
He's stirred up a lot of trouble.
Has he ever?
Yes.
Yeah.
But okay, on that note, outside of getting to work on this lovely show, I'd love to tell our listeners about you. So Ryan, what do you like to do for fun when you're not being Noah or living without, you know, electricity?
Well, I have electricity.
I meant on this show.
Yes. I have a family. I love my family. I love my kids. I have a motorcycle shop. I build custom motorcycles.
That's so cool.
He says it so roughly. It's so cool.
Yeah, we
where is it?
It's in Squamish, BC, my hometown, where I live. It's called Tristone Moto. We do custom work on we restore and customize vintage motorcycles, and it's just fun. I like motorcycles. I've ridden motorcycles most of my life, and it's just another creative outlet. We don't do it for the money. My partners are stunt guys who happen to be mechanics and filmmakers. We film everything, and we just love the creative aspect. It's just art. Like,
So do you share videos of you guys putting these bikes together?
Mm-hmm.
Where can people find this? That is literally so cool.
Go to Instagram and follow tristonemoto.com. We just launched the Instagram account. We were doing it out of my garage, and it got busy and crazy. My wife was like, get out of the garage. So we opened a shop, and then as soon as we opened the shop, it got a little crazy pretty quick, but we do great work. We do complete fabrication, and it's fun moving metal and you know, we'll sit around and we'll look at a bike, and then we'll visualize how we see it and strip it down. And my personal style, I like to make bikes that look like they could survive the apocalypse. my partner Clancy, who's the he's like.
What a cool name, by the way, Clancy.
Clancy Peterson. Yeah, it's a great
he's
name.
Born to work on motorcycles.
And he's he's a stunt guy, mechanic, but he's like an engineer's mind. So the way he designs bikes are sleek and cool. And then we have the mad scientist filmmaker. His name's Kevin Forden, who documents everything and keeps us on our toes because he's absolutely insane.
I feel like this is the coolest thing a guest has ever told me that they do for fun. I'm like, how cool are you?
We don't do it for money. We all have other jobs. We all work in the film industry, but we love that creative process of something that people just have given up on, something that somebody's just forgotten about or given up on. And you take a motorcycle apart and it starts to tell you a story, and then you get to add to its story and you get to give it new life and a new home and give somebody a one of a kind super cool piece of machinery, and that's art that you can go fast on.
I feel like there's a huge crossover between like the film community and the motorcycle loving community.
Absolutely.
So many of my actor, film crew friends, director friends, like they're all obsessed with motorcycles.
Yeah. Most of our
I concur on that one.
Yeah. Most of our builds are for tend to be for people in the film industry or people like special forces military
That's
so I'm speechless. Like that is rad.
Yeah. It's fun.
And so, Alex, I was trolling your Instagram, and
girl.
I realized that we have a similar love for Harry Potter.
It was pretty magical. I was in New York recently, and I got off the subway and was just like, I was just going to go for a walk. And I stumbled across this incredible exhibit at the New York Historical Society it was the history of Harry Potter. So they had like a bunch of stuff from her, like J.K. Rowling's notes. They had a bunch of her original, like the original books that she hand wrote and like her original timelines and stuff. And then they also had all of this historical material that served as both inspiration and source material for what she was writing. Huh. So I found it so gratifying because, you know, like I tend to think, especially when I read something like that epic or you see a movie or something, you're like, oh, that idea obviously just sprung fully formed into their mind because they're a genius and I'm just like a stupid idiot. And then seeing this and seeing like, oh no, you have an idea, you do a whole bunch of research and that research spawns more ideas. So to see just the depth of her research and the world that she was drawing on, you know, there's like pictures of the first potions class, historical drawings from like the 1500s.
Wow.
It was pretty rad. I highly recommend it. If anyone's in New York City, go to that exhibit.
I'm about to book a ticket home. My family's going to be like, oh, we're so, I was like, I'm not here for you.
Yeah. Actually the whole museum is pretty incredible. They also had an exhibit about the history of Jim Crow upstairs.
There's more.
Oh yeah, there's like the Harry Potter exhibits on the bottom, and then there's this really arresting photography exhibit on the second floor, and then
hang on a second. So when you say like the Harry Potter exhibit has the potions and stuff from the 1500s,
etchings.
But not actually, they're like not actually from the 1500s because it's fiction.
No, they are. Like this is like historical material that is part of her research. So, like, you know, a lot of
things like alchemy.
That's incredible. Yeah. That's so cool.
It was amazing. Like, there's all of this. There were like fossils and like all of these textbooks that were her source material.
She kind of is like the best mom ever, huh? Like, just like bedtime stories that turned into like a gajillion dollar enterprise. But she did all the research. She's like, my bedtime stories are kind of cool. Oh, let me do some research. Oh, this is pretty fascinating. And because that's like...
Well, so for people who don't know, she actually wrote Harry Potter, and a lot of it deals with death because it was her dealing with her mother dying.
Yeah.
So a lot of it's death. But the first book, we call it the Sorcerer's Stone in the United States, but it's actually the Philosopher's Stone.
Yeah, in Canada, it's the Philosopher's Stone.
So Nicholas Flamel, real alchemist. There's a whole book about him in this exhibit. Like, there's all this... like ancient texts about Nicholas Flamel.
That's really cool.
And yeah.
Is it true? I mean, it's true. I think this is a little bit strange, but I heard the reason they didn't call it the Philosopher's Stone is because they were worried people wouldn't know what a philosopher was.
Yeah. Yeah, I read that. That's true. I mean,
that was in the exhibit. They did say that in the exhibit.
Yes,
so
I feel like that's always truthful.
I feel like that's narrow-minded marketing.
Well, but I also think that
it might
mean something different too, right? Like because philosopher to some people to different culture, you know, in England might call to mind something a little bit different than clearly what they wanted it to mean here was sorcerer, as in wizard, whereas philosopher might not call that same thing to mind mm-hmm. within American culture. You know what I mean? It's just like the specificity of language. I kind of respect it in a weird way.
You just said specificity.
Specificity.
I did. I couldn't even say it the first time.
Wait, so what house are you, more importantly?
Oh, for the...
Well,
just this rabbit
based
hole.
On the fact that I just said specificity and talked about ancient texts, I'm clearly a Ravenclaw.
Me too. Yeah. Right
yeah.
here,
yeah, girl.
Yes. Ravenclaw forever.
Is there not a secret Ravenclaw?
No, I just wanted...
Thing?
No.
Actually,
no. I mean, this is my Raptors claw. I'm a Toronto basketball fan, so this is my Raptors claw, but it could be a Ravenclaw. Ravenclaw yeah. as well.
I don't know anything about Spire. I'm like, okay. Yeah, I'll do it. That's the new Ravenclaw sign.
Yeah, it's Ravenclaw.
I'm down. I would do that. I would do that at the Quidditch match.
If my sister is watching this right now, she's like, you're stealing our Raptors hand signal. That is rude. Sorry, Lily. I love you.
You call me a nerd for we're loving comic books.
Hey, dude, I call you a nerd, universal. But I never said I wasn't a nerd.
Like, what's your favorite comic book? You can bring it up.
My favorite comic book?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's a tough one. Well, yeah, right now, currently?
Yeah.
Is probably Seven to Eternity by Rick Remender or Black Science by Rick Remender.
There you go.
Those would be my favorites right now. I just did a series for Rick called Deadly Class, and I'm a big fan of his. He's a great author, and he did he wrote this really great Venom canon that was just like crazy good. Yeah, he's good at that. But I'd say historically, probably Sandman. I think is probably Sandman and Fables are probably two of my biggest. And growing up as a kid, Spider-Man was my guy. Spider-Man's always going to be my guy.
Well, what do you think of the new Marvel ones? Do you like them?
For me, Tom Holland.
Well, because you're a comic book fan.
Tom Holland's my favorite Spider-Man.
He's so good.
Hands down. Yeah. For me, Tom Holland's my Spider-Man. 100%. Like, that kid he's perfect. I think he's amazing. I think Avengers Infinity War, that scene between him and Tony Stark.
Do you know that was improv?
No.
That wasn't in there.
No.
That whole thing that happened between him and Robert Downey Jr., it was not... scripted. That was them. That was actually Tom. So kudos to him. Sorry, we're going off topic.
Yeah, we are.
We're starting just like talking about our other interests.
Anyway, we're on this show called Pure.
Please watch our show.
It's on WGN America.
Watch our show. We'll talk to you about other stuff anytime.
Wednesdays.
Reach out to us on Twitter. That's fine.
Wednesdays 10-9 Central.
WGN and, America.
Yeah. Right?
Wait, but people still want to know more about you. So I was going to ask, what upcoming projects do you guys have? What else are you working on? I know you just said you've got season 2 mm-hmm. in the
season
works.
Season 2, yeah. Yeah, that's been my focus for the past little while. That and, like, life stuff.
Harry Potter.
Butter.
Yeah, I just did, right before we did season 2, I did a show called Sacred Lies, which is on Facebook Watch. Mm-hmm. And then Deadly Class, which is out right now. I appear on it. I can't talk about it, but
you're going to be in it.
But I
go
know.
You'll see me. You would have seen me in the pilot, and maybe beyond. And that was wicked because Henry Rollins is in that TV show. This is awesome.
And you were just saying he's one of your favorite like comic book writers, right?
Rick Remender. Yeah, Henry Rollins is a punk rock icon from Black Flag. And yeah, how dare you?
No, I know now though. You're educating me so much, Ryan.
The more you know.
Dun, 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 dun.
No, it's yeah. So you know, plugging away, always on the hustle. You know, in our business. You know, just working
always
away. And
one job and to the next.
Just,
oh yeah,
I just would be over the moon to get another season or two of Pure.
Yeah,
it's my favorite job ever.
Yeah, we want to live in this world for a while. Yeah.
I have anxiety for Ezekiel, so that's like my goal this weekend is to binge that and find out what happens.
Man.
Well, I'm so excited. Please tell us what you think when you finish it, because I'm so excited to hear.
I will, for sure. And then where can everyone find you on social media so they can follow along and tell you what they think, too?
Yeah, I'm at Baxton Peasley, which is a bastardization of my last name because my younger siblings got to social media before I did and took all of our last names on all of the social media.
Wait, but your younger siblings aren't also Alex?
No, they're not, but I just figured it was too long. If I put my whole name in there, it's like, it's way too long. It's too long for Twitter.
Is that on, Twitter and Instagram?
Twitter and Instagram, it's the same thing, yeah.
Yeah, I'm at Rye Robbins on Twitter, and on Instagram, I'm Rain City Ryro.
Awesome, and I'm Carolina Benetti. You can find me on Twitter at Carolina Benetti and Instagram at LenaBean113. As always, guys, thank you so much for tuning in to this episode of Spotlight On.
Our founder, Kevin Undergaro, and me, Maria Menounos, would like to thank you for tuning in to AfterBuzz TV. Remember, we're not just the first, we're the biggest in the world, and we're the only destination for all your favorite TV shows. Whatever you crave, we've got it. So go to AfterBuzzTV.com and check out our lineup. Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.